Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hi, I'm Phelan.
And I'm Vanessa. And you're listening to Cultified.
Our new podcast mini-series where we address the burning question, wait, is this a cult?
Each week, Phelan and I pick something that kind of feels like it might be a cult. Stuff like spin classes, flat earthers, or even K-pop.
Using a four-point cult scorecard we invented, we run through a juicy checklist to see whether or not it actually deserves cult status, or if it's just a movement.
Ready to find out if your fave pastime is actually maybe kind of a cult? You can keep score with us wherever you're listening.
Let's get cultified.
Okay, yeah. Hi, Vanessa.
Hey! So excited for our first episode.
Me too. This is really exciting.
So here we are. Our dream is coming true. You and I have talking about cults for about 2 years now.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I feel like this is important for listeners to know, like, why, how, what, how do we even know each other? Why are we here bonding over our mutual obsession with cults?
Yes. And why am I going to be shunned?
That's more important. Mine is so quick. So we met when I was actually interviewing Renee from Feminist Book Club for my podcast, Math Therapy. And we just started talking about cults. And you produced that podcast. And I think afterwards we just started DMing, being like, oh my God, I'm also obsessed with cults. Like, isn't that what happened? Kind of?
Yes. I edited the podcast and started DMing you guys like, oh my goodness, we all need to have a conversation about cults or something like that. And then from there, we just started sending each other cult information. And our relationship bloomed.
It bloomed. It really did. Okay. But so that's why we're here making a cult podcast. And honestly, for me, I can't even explain why I'm obsessed with cults. I honestly think, guys, it's because I'm constantly trying to determine whether I could be brainwashed by a cult or not. Like, I think it's like one of those things that's like so close to possible that I'm always like, I wonder if I would have been in this cult had someone approached me. So it's kind of like one of those things for me. But for you, like, I think you should explain a bit because it runs a bit deeper.
Yeah. So for me, I actually grew up in a Christian cult. And people are always like, what? They imagine me like being in cotton gowns in a field somewhere, barefoot, running around.
I'm picturing that.
But that's not the reality of all cults. Like, some cults are very modernized. And so I grew up, my Christian cult was Jehovah's Witnesses. And a lot of people don't think of Jehovah's Witnesses as a cult. Because if a person like me comes out and says, this is a cult, they are completely shunned from the community. And the community is the people that you grew up with, like the only people that you know. So it's a really scary thing to do. You're considered an apostate, which means like you're the devil. You completely disagree with the Bible, which is not my case. I actually am obsessed with cults because I find it interesting that they're able to take some truths and make like manipulate it to make people believe like it's the only truth, you know? So I grew up being told how to dress, who to hang out with, what I could watch. My mom was shunned for 10 years of my life, so I wasn't allowed to have friends really in the congregation, but I also couldn't hang out with my worldly friends, my friends from school. So it was just me and my brother for like 10 years. Literally, when I say me and my brother, it was just me and my brother. We had seminars 3 times a year where people would come on stage and let us know that if you leave, you're going to get beat up by the devil. So you might as well just stay, which is the fear of leaving. And then there, you also have the fear of the end of the world, which is another thing that was like terrifying. It's like the end of the world could come at any moment. And if you leave and it's the end of the world, then you're dead. Like, there's no coming back. God's not going to save you. Jesus isn't going to come down on his white horse and protect you. Like, you're dead and you're going to watch yourself die with the rest of the people. And that's a really scary thought to have as a child.
This is wild. This is wild. Like, yeah, that's conjuring all sorts of images. So we obviously need to do a whole episode on this because right now I'm like, why are we even talking about anything else? Like, this is the, I have 1,000 questions. But we'll do, we should just, we'll do a whole episode. We'll interview you.
Yeah. Okay, cool. We can do that.
But you know what you're making me think about though, saying that is like, you just at the beginning of that, you were like, yeah, like people don't know Jehovah's Witness is a cult because, you know, members can't come out and say it. But yeah, like, does any member of any cult admit it's a cult? Right. Actually, like, that's actually, no, I'm serious. Like, is there any, right, like, do you ever think you're in a cult and you're like, oh yeah, like I'm in a cult and like, that's fine. Or is cults like a,
absolutely not. Right? And the word cult itself is like, the fact that that we were so scared of the word cult in itself is right there alone, like a telling sign that it, right, is a cult. But I remember vividly being like trained on how to counter people telling me that I was in a cult. So when you're in a cult, you definitely don't think you're in a cult. And I would always say, I'm a Christian. What are you talking about? Just like you're Catholic,
I'm right,
a different denomination. No, this was not. This was like, this was an extreme version of whatever anybody else was in. So, yeah, people don't necessarily think of it as that because, again, people aren't, they're friendly, they're knocking on your door, but these people don't know they're in cults.
Okay, so we, like, that's the next episode. We should just do Jehovah's. Like, we need to, like, I mean, we wanted to start off with something a bit, like, I was about to say a bit lighter, but like, we're still talking about cults. So like, it's not exactly like light, but I mean, something not so personal, because that's like, I mean, I definitely think we should talk about it when it's time, but that is a pretty good reason that you're into it. And that what you wanted to start this is like showing people like, yeah, we want to be kind of funny about it, but also we want to like show you guys who are listening that like, culty behavior is in places you don't necessarily expect, right, it to be.
And as much as you may think it's not that big of a deal because it doesn't affect you, everybody, yeah, around you is affected by cult-like behavior. So it does affect you.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Okay. Oh my God. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm totally. I'm good. Look, I've been to therapy. I've worked through these things. I am good. I'm ready.
Now we're going to work through it with everyone. Okay. So every week, okay, we said this in the intro, but every week we are going to be bringing you guys a new, maybe cult, maybe not cult. And Phelan and I are going to figure it out. We're going to go through our very special, very exclusive cult checklist that still needs a name, by the way. So you guys are free to think of one.
Yeah. Let us know.
We're going to go through our cult scorecard and we are going to determine whether this thing is a cult or not.
Yes. So for our first topic, we chose flat earthers.
Dun, 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 dun. Wait, say it again. Sorry, I interrupted with my drum roll. Dun, 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 dun. What did we choose?
Flat earthers.
Louder for the people in the back. That's right. We said flat earthers.
And you actually brought this topic to the table. So how about you introduce it?
Okay, so I'm bringing flat earthers to the table because I watched a documentary called Behind the Curve a few weeks ago and was shook to the core about flat earthers. I've always kind of been like, oh, flat earthers, like kind of weird that you think the earth is flat, no big deal. But I did not realize it was a global movement with literally millions of people believing the earth is flat and so much more, which we'll get into. But I started thinking, how, you know, we're at a time right now where, you know, science and evidence seems to do nothing to dissuade someone from thinking whatever they think. And when I watched this documentary, I was like, oh my God, the flat earth movement is like that. And it has so many attributes about it that prevent people from getting out, or like prevent people in this case from saying, hey, you know what, actually, I think the earth might be round. And that's why I started thinking perhaps it is a cult, because even in the face of evidence and even in the face of all of this criteria on our list, which we'll go through, there are millions of people who still think the earth is flat. And I guess, and the main thing is like, it's not just a belief, it's a belief with a community and a set of other beliefs and a set of restrictions and la, la, la. Anyways, that's why I brought it to the table. I'm fascinated and we're going to get into why.
Yes. And I'm so glad you brought this one to the table, because I would have never, ever in a million years have thought of flat earthers as like a cult until you did bring it to the table and I did my research and I'm like, oh yeah. So let's go over our checklist. Number one is leadership. Does the flat earth community have a leader?
Okay, so why don't you go first? What do you think?
Absolutely.
Whoa, so okay, that like you're sure. Okay.
I'm coming in hot.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel like that. First of all, there was a Mark and then there was a, I can't remember the other guy's name.
So Mark Sargent, especially in this documentary, was like,
yes,
he's one of the big leaders.
Yes. And then his rival, I can't remember his name.
Hold on, I'm looking for his name.
The YouTuber.
Okay, so there's Patricia, which we'll get into later.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, wow, you like really know who she is.
Look, I was taking notes.
Who's his rival, actually? Because even I'm on the Wikipedia page and it's like documentary starring Mark Sargent and Patricia Steer. And I was like, starring.
And that's why the, and that's why the rival was so upset because he wanted it to be about him. And they at the end, they showed in the credits, like he asked for millions of dollars or something and like 50% of the rights of how it would be edited. And they were like, we can't do that for you. So that's why he wasn't really in the documentary as much. He was the one that was like, I started this whole thing. And I'm like, how do you start Flat Earth?
Mark Sargent. I think it is I feel like it's the Spiros guy.
Probably. Mark Sargent. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so anyways, our question was, does it have a leader?
Yes.
And we're going to say, Mark Sargent is one of the main leaders. Mm-hmm. And also, like, let's just talk about leadership here, okay? Because yeah. I can't find this other guy's name, but I think it's fair to say there are a couple of leaders, one of them being Mark Sargent, who is proudly a leader and tries to say he's a leader. Loves the idea of it. And the reason I think it's important is these people are in charge of the community and their beliefs. So like they are actually leading a movement where they like, I don't know, I feel like they guide the principles of what people are allowed to think. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you take, look, there's this idea that people sometimes don't like to think of because it makes you have to categorize yourself or label yourself, right? But it's just reality of how human nature has always played out. There's leaders, there's followers, right? And usually right. The followers really trust the leaders of the communities that they're in, and they trust them just by their word. Me being in advertising, we just watched a video of Morgan Freeman coming on camera and saying, hey, I believe in science. I'm not a doctor, but I've heard a lot of you guys trust me. So I'm coming on here to say you guys need to get the vaccine, because he knows his word influences so many people. So a leader knows that their word impacts people. It's what they do with that power.
I love that. I think that's kind of it. Like you might be thinking, oh, but it's not a leader in the sense of like, let's say, I don't know, Keith Raniere from NXIVM or like, you know, the pastor of a church, but it actually is quite like that. All it is like an acknowledgement of your word has influence and how you use that word to convince other people to do things. So I think we're both going to agree. Criteria number one, leadership has been met.
Yes.
So, okay. Criteria number two of our cult checklist is membership. And let's a few things to like, when we think about membership, we mean, is there a core group of members that follow the leader no matter what? Is there a way, so membership acquisition fits into this. Is there a way people recruit members into the group? Is there any exploitation of the members? So saying stuff like, okay, if you want to be a part of this group, you've got to give us your money or like, I don't know, sleep with someone. And finally, freedom, which is, you know, is there threats of like bad shit happening if you leave the cult? So like, those are all the things we mean when we talk about membership. So what do you think?
Yeah, so in regards to membership for Flat Earthers, I think there's some deception going on when you watch the documentary and they run that test to figure out if the Earth is round, and they figure out it's round and they're like, well, we got to keep it hush.
Yeah, oh my God. I forgot about that part. Yep.
Yeah, crazy. That part blows my... It's like, you made a documentary. How do you think it was going to be hush?
Okay, but that's such a good point. So like, exactly, like they keep things from the group. This actually reminds me of NXIVM, where certain group members started finding out that Keith was like not cool and just like didn't tell anyone else because they weren't scared. Okay, so yes, I'm, yeah.
Also, then when you withhold information, are you really giving people the option of freedom of choice? Like, they don't really get to decide what they want to do when you're basically saying, I'm going to keep this information so you stay in my community. So also, again, freedom is restricted. Yeah, what do you think? I'm going to let you go.
Well, okay, so I think that's kind of hit two nails on the head there. And then I would also say a big thing about like freedom is, are you allowed to have like other beliefs? So this kind of goes back to your intro about like your membership in a cult and this idea of like, would you still be accepted in this group of flat earthers if you also believed in some other things that they didn't believe in? And I think the answer is no to that, because like, that's this idea of it being exclusive and a closed group. You can kind of see that everyone in the cult believes the same thing. So it's not like some people are like, you know what? I think maybe the earth is flat, but maybe it's round. Or like, I think I would believe the earth is flat if I saw some proof. Or like, I think there's a chance that the earth is actually a sphere. That's a big no-no, right? Like, you have to at all costs. You cannot question the belief. And that's the only reason you're allowed in the group, and other people are not allowed in. So they don't let other people with different opinions in, which I would say like, yeah, that's exclusivity. That's, you know, a restriction of freedom. And I wonder about exploitation. Like, this is an interesting one, right? Like, when we see the documentary, they're all paying a ton of money to go to that convention and all of these conventions that happen like yearly. I don't know. It's not straight. Like, I don't see anything about straight up exploitation, but I would say again, anytime you're sort of saying you have access to this group or people, if you give me money, that's a bit exploitative, I guess.
And let's be real. When you look at the crowd, it was mainly white people anyways. So I feel like...
I was going to ask about that, because I wonder what the demographics are around.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to
say. I actually don't know. I don't know.
But then at the same like, time, on the documentary, you see Shaq talking about it and all these NBA players saying, yeah, the earth is flat.
Wait, what?
So, yeah.
I've totally blocked that part out. Hold on a second. Hold on a second.
There's so many NBA, these tall men.
Why? Why? What?
I have no idea.
But you know what though? Okay. But this goes back to leadership and influence, because this is like when like Tom Cruise took over Scientology, right? So it's like,
thank you.
As soon as, yeah, then all these other celebrities got involved. So like, maybe some NBA player got into it and then a bunch of his friends were like, oh yeah, we trust you, and got involved. So I feel like it's not like there's a specific like draw to basketball players. It's probably just one person started this.
Yeah. But it's just the fact that these prominent people are speaking this out into existence.
Exactly.
Where then it makes you feel like, yeah, who else is a flat earther? And then I don't want to make people feel like I'm judging them, but I kind of am. And I kind of want to know why you think that way. And are you just going to tell me you think the earth is round because you don't want me to think a certain way of you? Like, let's talk about this.
And can we keep in mind, guys, we're talking millions of people, not like 10 people, like millions of people
on the earth really truly believe the earth is flat. And okay, the only reason why we can sit here and say definitely that the earth is not flat is because of science and math.
That's right. Science and math. Correct. Well, okay. So this leads to three, which is belief system. Okay. So the third item on our checklist is, okay, so is there a belief system? And is there a belief system that's like indoctrinated into members? And also, is there a belief system that like kind of implies you have to go through a transformation? That implies you have to go through a transformational process to like reach some higher level of belief system. And I would say 100%, and you see this with anti-science movements all the time, where the people are like, no, I'm so much more enlightened than you because I see through all of this, and trust us, we're going to help you see through all of this. Right. And then they act as though like the questioning of math and science is like actually superior.
Right. Look. Math and science
in the face of evidence.
Right. I'm not going to pretend like math doesn't exist and science doesn't exist. maybe you weren't good at it in school. That's a different conversation. But at the end of the
day, but do you agree it exists?
Evidence is evidence. It definitely exists. And here's my thing. In the beginning of the documentary, they said the reason we win versus science is because science just throws math at us. Yes. 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 That's what okay. they're supposed to do. That's evidence. Like, that's how you prove things.
That's wait, and the craziest part. Okay, the craziest part. If you guys haven't watched this documentary, the most insane
it's
part
called
is,
Behind the Curve.
It's called Behind the Curve. They disprove that the earth is flat about three times. Like, the actual flat earthers conduct experiments, and then they're like, oh shit, like, nope, that experiment didn't work. It actually proves the earth is round. And at the end of it, like, whoever the documentary maker is like, so like, in the face of all this evidence, like, are you gonna, you know, believe the earth is round? And they're like, nope. Like, no, can do, can't do it. Like, it is, it like, we, they can't. Okay, but this goes down to four, actually. I feel like we're jumping ahead.
Let's back up a little bit. Yeah, because another reason why I think it's a belief system for them is because in the beginning of the documentary also, which is what I told you terrified me, is he said that he was a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
And
right.
he had okay. jumped into every single conspiracy theory before he was like, this is the only one left that I'll jump into. And that's how every single one of them fall into this flat earth theory. And so I was scared, like, oh my goodness, I've fallen into a lot of these conspiracy theory rabbit holes. This, am I going to become a flat earther? And then as soon as he said, science throws math at us, I was like, oh, nope, I'm good.
Yeah, like, they're saying it as though it's like a bad word. Like, it's like, oh, as soon as you throw them. Like, it's not, that's not a legitimate way of presenting information, which is so interesting because, like, isn't math like one of the things we accept as like a universal truth and a universal language? Like,
pi literally is everything.
Okay, so hold on. So this is why, though, this is important what you're saying is, like, this is why you're saying number three belief system gets a big check mark because it is like a whole world view.
Yeah.
It's not, it goes beyond the earth being flat. It goes into science isn't real. We know more than the average person. And that's why the earth is flat. Not because we've proved it's flat, but because everyone else and science says it's round and we believe science is fake, basically.
Right. And they trust no one. That's the thing. Like, when you're that deep in conspiracy theories, like, I'm fascinated by conspiracy theories, but when you're that deep into them, you don't trust anyone. So how could you trust science?
You can't.
And that brings us into number four, which makes me want to bring right. up, okay, we're talking about the group of people being very egotistical. When you looked in the room, the average or the ratio of men to women was about 9 to 1.
9 to 1. You're
nine
so right.
9 to 1. And then one of the women that was a leader, her name was Patricia Steer. She was just sexualized the entire time.
Totally sexualized. They all wanted to get with her and impress her with their like bigger flat earth, like theory, like, ooh, my like, wait, system. So number four, by the way, because we're getting so excited. We're not even explaining. Number four is about systems of control. Sorry. No, it's fine. We're just like so into it. So here's the thing. The systems of control are so great that even Mark himself was like, look, even if I had an inkling the earth might be round, I cannot say that because my entire community now and life is built around flat earthers. I have no other friends. That's all I hang out with. Those are the only people that support me. So like, that is a system of control. If you leave, you will lose everything. So if you decide the earth isn't flat, you're fucked.
Yes, absolutely. Also, let's talk about the control he had over Patricia. She did not like him. She did not want to be with him at all.
It's true.
But
it's so
seemed
true.
Like she felt true. Like she wouldn't have a platform.
Patricia, call us.
Yes,
call
please.
Us.
We will help you out. Sis, come on. She felt like she wouldn't have a platform if she was like, I don't want to be with you at all. You could totally tell. And he was the type of person that would, because he did it to the YouTuber, completely start shaming her because there were so many people that were shaming her and he barely stuck up for her. They would slut shame her. And they were literally slut shaming her for no reason. And he barely stuck up for her. He basically acted like there was nothing he could do about it.
Ew.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It is true. It was very male-centric for sure. And like the only reason Patricia had a voice is because everyone, you're right, she was sexualized and everyone wanted to get with her. So they were like, oh, like you can, we'll start a podcast together. Mark kept being like, I just wanted to spend more time with Patricia. Like, okay. Okay. So, all right. So we've gone through the checklist basically. Wow. This feels okay. So at this point in the podcast, because this is new to everyone, this is where Phelan and I decide whether this is officially a cult or not. But I feel like we both agree.
We agree about this one, two, three, cult. It's definitely a cult. We've said it like 15 times throughout this whole podcast.
It's a cult.
It's a cult.
It's a cult.
It's a cult.
It's 100% a cult.
If you're a flat earther, I'm sorry to tell you that you are in a cult. And it's, you yeah. still have time.
You're in a cult.
You have time to get out.
You can, no, now I definitely don't want to pass judgment on which cults are easier to get out of or not. But I feel like you can do it. If you're a yes. flat earther, absolutely. I feel like people will understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one thing that they said was like, we've never felt like we fit in anywhere. And now we feel like we have each other. And let me tell you, if you're a flat earther and you feel like you've never fit anywhere and this is the one group, I promise you there are other groups and there are other reasons why you can relate to people other than science isn't real, because science and math is definitely real.
Okay. I love that you said that, because that was actually a big thing, is the sense of belonging. So first of all, I'm sorry you felt like you didn't belong anywhere. People can be mean. The internet can be mean. The world can be rude. But I promise there are people out there exactly who are happy. You will find people out there who like you for more than the fact that you think the earth is as flat as a sheet of paper.
Yes.
Like there are probably amazing things about you. Maybe you like cats. Maybe you like origami. Maybe you like to go for long walks. Maybe you're funny. Like that is a more stable foundation for a friendship than a flat earth.
Yes.
Okay, great. We need to wrap this up.
Yes. So thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you like our content that we're coming up for you. We will be doing this monthly for you. My name is Phelan.
I'm Vanessa.
This is Vanessa Yis. You can follow me on Instagram. My name is at Phelan Oliver, PHALINOLIVER. And if you have any topics that you would like to bring to the table, let us know on Twitter at Feminist Book Club. It's FM. It's no vowels, Feminist Book Club on Twitter. And Vanessa, where can they find you?
Okay. I'm so sorry. I interrupted your outro by just being like, hi, I'm Vanessa. But hi, you guys can find me at The Math Guru. I believe in math and science, so hit me up. I love it. Okay, well, it's been so fun.
Yes.
If you're a flat earther, hit us up, please. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Today's episode is sponsored by Feminist Book Club's weekly newsletter, Beyond the Box. Did you know Feminist Book Club publishes upwards of 5 blog articles and 2 podcast episodes every week? Our diverse crew of contributors share their unique experiences on hot new books, older titles that may have flown under the radar, social justice issues that are bubbling up online and offline, pop culture topics with a feminist lens, and so much more. No need to check back every single day. We've now compiled all our content in a weekly newsletter that we send every Friday. What a great way to spend a Friday at lunch. We call it Beyond the Box. You can sign up with the link in the show notes or in the sidebar of our blog. Please note this is a separate email list than our marketing list, and you do need to opt in. Joining Beyond the Box list does not subscribe you to our marketing list. We only send 1 Beyond the Box email a week. So find that link in our show notes or again in our blog sidebar to get all our content emailed directly to you every Friday.
Hello again, friends. Mariquita Guerrera here with you today to discuss The Personal Librarian by Marie Benedict and Victoria Christopher Murray, published by Berkeley Books and set for release on June 29th, 2021. The Personal Librarian is an historical fiction portraying the life of Belle DaCosta Green, personal librarian to John Pierpont Morgan, as she cultivated and curated a most impressive and expansive collection of rare books and art. Ms. Green was an incredibly formidable and cunning businesswoman at a time when being a woman in business was a phenomenal and rare achievement on its own. But Ms. Green's success was even more hard-won and notable because she achieved it all while passing as a white woman in the early 1900s, attributing any darkness of her skin to a fabricated Portuguese grandmother. Born Belle Marion Greener, the daughter of Genevieve Ida Fleet, of a prominent Black D.C. family, and Richard Theodore Greener, the first Black man to attend and graduate from Harvard, former dean of Howard University and a strong advocate for civil rights, Belle and her siblings adopted white identities upon Richard Greener's separation from the family. There is very little known about Belle DaCosta Green's life, even extending to the actual year of her birth, as she was an intensely private person and endeavored to burn all of her personal documents during her lifetime. Even more has been forgotten about her in the intervening years. This makes her both compelling and enigmatic as an individual, but presents some significant logistical challenges for any author attempting to accurately portray her life. Thus, Benedict and Marie were positioned to need to take some liberties. And while I commend them for taking on this truly challenging and worthy project, I have some objections about some of their creative decisions. I don't feel like I can review this work honestly without noting some of those points. My main point of contention is the way the romantic relationships are portrayed in this book. Green is shown fixated on her relationships with men, specifically her longtime lover, Bernard Berenson, an esteemed art historian, and her employer, John Pierpont Morgan. Vast portions of the book are dedicated to these men, with Green concerned about her position in their lives, longing for Berenson or being scorned and heartbroken, or vacillating between wanting a romantic connection with Morgan and maintaining a professional relationship. There is no mention of her rumored sexual liaisons with women, but instead, Green is portrayed holding another character's so-called Boston marriage against her, in a move that would guarantee a social, mutually assured destruction should the character reveal Green's true background as a Black woman. As an aside, if you're unfamiliar, a Boston marriage is an antiquated and, I think, sort of charming term for a relationship between two women that was sometimes, seemingly quite often, romantic or sexual in nature. In this case, this was a romantic relationship, and the character affected was Morgan's youngest daughter, Anne Tracy Morgan, who was a philanthropist and union activist in her own right. While there are reportedly some tensions between the two women, the source of those tensions appears to be unknown. In the author's note, Benedict and Marie disclose that they fabricated the nature of the conflict, which is disappointing. To my mind, it was not necessary to use Morgan's sexuality against her. The tension that was built up wasn't worth the disparagement, and especially with the omission of Green's own romantic dalliances, which is troubling. Further, the authors include Green's abortion as a plot point, using it as the catalyst for the degradation of her relationship with Berenson, which feels fair enough, I suppose, but they indicate that Green continued to mourn the loss of this pregnancy throughout her life. And that doesn't appear to be accurate. While Green did grieve it for a time, it didn't plague her. I resent that abortion is once again framed as a great loss in the life of an exceptional person, when that is often not the case, and in fact was not the case for Green. I respect that creating this narrative did require a lot of invention, but I wish the authors had chosen another path in this case, and in the case of Anne Tracy Morgan. It feels very much like they did Green a disservice and did not realize the full potential of her story. After all of this, you may infer that I wouldn't recommend this title, but I would, actually. I think The Personal Librarian, despite the concerns I raised, is a net good. Not the warmest endorsement, I know, but I wouldn't feel comfortable recommending it without having aired some of those grievances first, especially when they touch on sexuality and reproductive rights. I'm quite fond of Belle DaCosta Green's story, and I would love nothing more than for her accomplishments to reach a wider audience. Plus, seriously, the amount of rare book nerding out you can do with this title, and the art, really, the art is phenomenal. To be clear, there are no images printed in the book. You need to have either previous awareness of the art and artist mentioned or an internet connection and the ability and desire to search it out. But it's worth it, friends. It really is. If you're interested in an easy read about an unfortunately forgotten but powerful woman, do go ahead and check out The Personal Librarian. If you want something with more accuracy, there's a biography written by Heidi Artizzoni titled An Illuminated Life, Belle DaCosta Green's Journey from Prejudice to Privilege, which the authors of this book used as main source material. I haven't read Artizzoni's book, so I cannot recommend it on its merits, just a passing mention here. Plus it has photos, which I think is nice. Anyway, thanks for spending a little time here with me again today while I talked about The Personal Librarian, written by Marie Benedict and Victoria Christopher Murray, and due for publication on June 29th. I hope if the book piques your interest, you'll check it out. As always, the link to that will be in the show notes. I hope if the book isn't for you, you will still look into this little piece of history that's so worthy of review. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at @O_Murray. That is OH_MURRAY. Until next time, folks, be well.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a thing.